This week on football, it's football. Wait.
This week on football, it's football.
This week on football, it's not football, it's La Liga.
Marcus Rashford fights back.
Can't have people questioning my commitment to Man United. It's, to me and to my family, it's ridiculous.
Man City, now the kings of Manchester.
Phil Foden. Oh, brilliant!
Guardiola is ruining football.
Twice!
Have you ever wanted to eat a football club?
Paul Walker is dead.
Father Time, speaking wisdom into my mind. Tell me stories of all that are great. Cherish these days before it's too late.
The Paul Walker.
Paul Walker, yeah.
The guy from Fast and Furious.
Welcome to Go Puss with Jumpers. I'm your host, Gareth. Next to me is the other host, Alex Price.
Hello.
So you're used to Alex kind of doing his own solo episodes. And even when we've done do episodes, Alex wrote the episodes. But he has now tasked me this week with writing a whole episode and not doing anything at all himself. So the pressure's completely on me. I'm scared. Alex is having a seizure.
And not just that, we are live on TikTok as well.
I forgot about that. I always forget about that.
Are we going to have to edit out the fact that I said Paul Walker is dead?
No, he is dead.
I know. Oh, I suppose it's factual.
Yeah. He is dead. He is actually dead.
What's that got to do with football?
You will see.
Okay.
You'll see it has everything to do with football. So, me writing the episode, what are you expecting?
I'm expecting the most childish 30 to 40 minutes of podcast history.
I'm actually really, 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 really happy that you think this is going to last 30 to 40 minutes.
I think we tended... I watch all of our like episodes, and when it's me and you or with a guest, it tends to go on for quite a long time. When it's me, I end up like just chatting to myself for half an hour, and I'm like, okay, I'm bored of myself now.
Whenever I've done the episodes on my own, I actually genuinely about 15, 20 minutes in, started hating myself and being like, I really hate my voice.
Yeah.
I don't know how people ever are around me. But let's not go into that.
Let's not dig that.
So this week, I'm going to kick things off. Obviously, me writing this episode means that the best feature of all time, the twat list, is going to kick things off.
Early in the morning, Pat's still fucking yawning because he's a lazy ginger twat.
Alex, explain to everyone what the twat list is.
The twat list is a trip down Baker's psyche into all of his weird mannerisms and thoughts, and he tries to make you guess a footballer. Basically, he goes, guess a footballer, and then I go, Steve Guinan. He used to play...
How did you go to Steve Guinan?
I honestly don't know. He's the most obscure footballer I could think of.
But I would actually argue that, I don't know, this all stemmed from the Ricky Gervais kind of show. I kind of wanted to take Carl Pilkington's kind of cryptic game on their podcast, but just make it football. There's a trick to this cryptic game. And essentially, I give you guys and Alex three clues to go on, and they all make up this footballer or person in football or someone in the media's name that I have deemed a twat this week. And this week, clue number one to kick things off is this is the star of Zoe 101. Okay? That's clue number one. This is the star of Zoe 101. Obviously, one of the best Nickelodeon TV shows of all time. Did you watch Zoe 101?
I didn't watch a whole lot of... Like, when I was growing up, we didn't have Sky.
You didn't have Sky?
No.
Where did you live? Chernobyl?
We didn't have Sky, so I used to watch CBBC.
Oh,
so
God.
All of those like Nickelodeon shows.
He just grew up on Dick and Dom.
Dick and Dom in the Bungalow.
Ugh.
Rugrats.
Rugrats is elite.
Bernard's Watch.
Oh my God, was that the
Queen's
show?
Nose.
Was Bernard's Watch the show where he could stop the clock?
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, to be fair, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
But the good thing about Sky was you had CBeebies as well.
Yes, I
you just had CBeebies.
Yeah, I watched CBeebies, CBBC, so I didn't really watch Zoey 101, so I have no idea with that clip. But I had stuff to watch, and I grew up in a place where you could go outside.
I didn't just stay in all day watching fucking UK TV Gold, watching... mate. Clue number two, This killed Paul Walker. See? It always comes back around. There's always a method to the madness, okay?
Did Paul Walker, am I putting...
He is dead.
Yeah, did he die in a car crash, or was that in Fast and the Furious? Like, what was the?
I mean, to be fair, fair enough. That's not stupid to think, because he got in a lot of car crashes.
Did he die in a car crash?
He did. Yeah, he died in a car crash in Los Angeles.
That's
like
us dying in a podcast studio.
I don't think that's anything the same.
That's exactly the same. He does loads of car movies.
I don't think anyone is out there thinking, I'm worried about Alex and Gareth. They could. Again, a really serious podcast.
If we die on this TikTok live now,
this would go viral.
Yeah, that's the only way we're ever going to go viral, and anyone's going to know.
Should we just
do
it? Should we die? Should we just die for content?
Yeah.
This week on Go Uppers or Jumpers, we die.
So I don't know the Paul Walker. Yes, I think he died in a car crash.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with car. I'm thinking car.
So you're thinking car. Mm-hmm. For clue number two, we've got car locked in. Number three. Do.
Don't.
No. Do.
Conga.
Spelt with two O's. Conga.
Do.
Come on and do the conga. No, it's not that. It's the other do song.
Have you seen those TikTok guys who have got together and they're like, and they're talking about getting mugged by a conga line?
No.
That's going to be in this video right now. It's so good.
This is the clip.
Do. Come and join the conga.
It's a nice chain, bro.
Run me the house keys, bro.
Give me that fucking watch,
come
bro.
Come here, you pussy off.
Do. Where the fuck you running? Do. Get the fuck back here.
There was the clip that I've definitely just watched.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
That was such a good clip.
Thank you so much for showing me that.
Do.
Think of a song with do.
Come on and do the conga.
It's not the conga.
Okay, that's the only thing I can think of.
Should we just leave it for now?
Yeah.
And come back to it?
Park it.
Right, okay. So you'll be surprised, Alex. I have actually, watched a lot of football this week and looked at the news and stuff. Haven't only watched Wales and Cardiff. Mm-mm. And this week I wanted to talk about something. Is La Liga the most corrupt league in football? What do you think?
Or the Italian one?
Well, the Italian is kind of an obvious one because it has been for a long time.
Yeah, and it actually was corrupt.
No, it quite literally was. Yeah, obviously, Juventus got relegated, etc. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the officiating. I have never seen more clips from a league where we're talking about bad referee indecisions. Yeah. You get in the Premier League, but the ones in La Liga are insane. So I'm going to just play Bellingham's disallowed goal here.
Mamardashvili, مازالت الخطورة مرة ثانية وإبراهيم والحكم صفر. إبراهيم والحكم صفر. الحكم صفر. الحكم صفر.
That goal, that should have been a goal. Okay, that is absolutely horrendous. The worst part is there was a VAR check in that game that lasted at least 5 to 6 minutes. The referee didn't add that on. He even red carded Bellingham. Anyone is going to go insane after having that goal stripped away from them. That red card, first of all, needs to be overturned. And there needs to be a punishment in place for referees. I genuinely think right now, the climate of football officiating is horrendous. The fact that that ball has already been crossed, it's in the middle of the box, and he's blown up. Like, to be fair, he does blow up and the whistle is clear, but it is the fact that that referee thought it was okay to blow his whistle when the cross is in play. I will never understand that. Referees need to be held accountable, whether that's they get 3 match bans, they get stripped of their pay for a week or something. Obviously, actually, you can't do that because it's their job. But there needs to be something, even if it's just talking to the media. A lot of people have been saying that for a while. Something like they get to just do horrendous decisions and then nothing, and then just go back to officiating the week after. What do you think?
I think I'm not as upset. It's one of those things where he's blown the whistle, the ball's come in and it's headed in. Mm. So it's not like he's blown it as he's heading it in. Mm. So I'm not massively upset about that. It is gutting. It is devastating for Bellingham. The thing that I didn't like the most was that he got sent off.
Yeah.
The referee was being crowded by about 12 players, and Bellingham comes over. As Bellingham comes over, he turns to him, sends him off. Like, he could have sent any other player off, but he's gone, you're the biggest star, here's a red card. We saw it with Mason Greenwood earlier in the season as well. The referee sent off Mason Greenwood for no reason.
Other than just to make a name for himself.
The referees are trying to take the spotlight, and that is the biggest problem with officiating, is you've got to be a certain mindset to be a referee. You've got to go, like, there's a certain like level of power or control that you want to take from a game. So that is part of your personality. You then get onto the pitch. Of course you're going to try and make it about you. Look at Mike Dean for years.
Yeah.
Like these referees, they're not there to help the game. It doesn't feel like. They're there to go, well, this is me and I want to put my stamp on a game. The game's not about you. No. The game is about the football, the players, and you should be inconsequential to the game as much as possible.
It goes to when they were trying to bring these blue cards and everything.
Yeah.
They need to take away power from these referees. The one good thing, really, about VAR, and there's not many, is it takes a little bit of power off the main officiating referee in the middle of the pitch. Other than that, it's all a pile of shit. The game is overly officiated. And I totally agree. I guarantee you referees will do that. I've listened to Mike Dean on podcasts. I've heard other referees on podcasts. And they will quite literally say, we like to make a statement on the pitch. We will make a point.
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember who it was. I think it might be Mark Clattenburg or one of them, who quite literally said, the worst player he ever refereed was Craig Bellamy. And he used to make a point out of annoying him. Which, like, is insane. Your job is to just referee the game, not rile players up.
Yeah. Like the referees on the weekend, I was really disappointed, because the thing is, the United City game, that didn't come down to refereeing decision. I didn't think it was a foul on Rashford.
I was
going to
say, the next point I was going to talk was obviously Man City beat Man United. You know, what are your thoughts?
A lot of people blaming the referee for, because obviously Foden went on to score after Rashford was so-called fouled. I don't think it was a foul, but with the referees, we can't now go and blame the referees, but what it won't be noticed or talked about is all the little tiny fouls that didn't go United's way that do go City's way. And it's not an anti-Man United thing, it's a pro-Man City thing. They are getting away with it. Rodri, Bernardo Silva, Ruben Diaz, all of these players, when a team is counting on them, do these little niggly fouls and they get away with it. They're masters at it and they're brilliant at it, but the referees let them get away with it without booking them. Therefore, they can do two or three a game. How are you supposed to counter-attack on a team when they're doing these little tiny professional fouls that are just on the line? It's genius, but at the same time, referees have to stamp down on it. And that happened all game. Man United, if it was a Man United player and they pressed and one of the City players fell over, immediate free kick. If it was the other way around, they weren't given. And that happens. I'm not saying that's an anti-Man United thing. That's a pro-Man City thing. It happens in every Man City game that I watch.
Are you saying Man City are the only team that get away with that?
I don't think they are. I don't think it's corruption. I don't think referees are going, let's make sure Man City win and give them every little advantage. I think it's an aura of a club and a player and going, of course it's a foul. De Bruyne has gone down. He wouldn't have gone down like that. They don't judge players based off just a number on a shirt. They base off the name of the shirt. And I think that's what's wrong.
Well, obviously, how, you know, much of a genius Guardiola is with his tactics and how much he studies the game, do you not think that could just be part of their tactic?
It's 100% a tactic.
So you think Guardiola is setting up his players to do these little niggly things because he knows they'll get away with that?
Yeah, it's brilliant. Rodri's a master of it.
Yeah. So in terms of Man City, Man United now, I've got to ask you, as a Man United fan, obviously the history's there with Manchester United and they are a much bigger club historic-wise. Do you think now that Man City and Manchester is blue? Do you think that they are the kings of Manchester?
It'll never be blue.
No.
Because Manchester United is Manchester. Man United is the only club that you talk about when you, if you're from Brazil or Argentina.
But not anymore, though. You've got to argue, not anymore. There are probably little kids in Brazil, in Africa and stuff, who now probably, when they hear Manchester, they think of Man City. Like, you're talking the younger generation. You know, they're growing up, seeing Man City win all of these titles. They're not seeing Man United win any titles. Mm. Do you think, with the climate of football now, and Man City just being so dominant, in 10, 15 years' time, Man City, even 5 years' time, Manchester will be blue?
Let me ask you the question, as a neutral.
Yeah.
Would you rather, on your CV, played for Manchester United. Or played for
Manchester
City?
United, obviously, but we're talking about our demographic and our generation and the generations above. We grew up seeing Fergie and Man United just being this magical club, the theatre of dreams, Beckham, Giggs, all of this stuff. That was sort of Tevez, Ronaldo. Whereas now, all kids are seeing is, at best, Bruno Fernandes or maybe Rashford. There aren't anything to pull Manchester United to the younger generation right now. I genuinely think if things keep going, Manchester United just won't be one of those luxurious dream clubs for a kid to support. Mm. I think right now, and I even seen it, like when I was in America with Man City, like I saw Man City tops way more than Manchester United tops. Yeah. Things keep going. If Man United don't get their act together and start winning things again, I could genuinely see Man City overtaking Man United. And if it keeps going, you never know, in 30 years, Man City could have won the Champions League 10 times, the FA Cup 8 times, where their history would now be more dominant than Man United. It could happen. I don't want it to happen, because I just look at Man City and I just think of them as like a, I don't know, even down to their kit colours, their badge, their stadium, it's all just soulless. And I just don't look at them and think, wow, what a club.
Yeah.
Obviously, I look at them and think, wow, what a team.
Yeah. You can't erase history.
Of course not.
When a team has a history for decades and decades, and then a team comes up and then starts winning stuff, it doesn't erase that history.
Well, so Man City don't have a George Best, they don't have a Bobby Charlton, they don't have like a Nobby Styles, like all of these old things that happened in 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, the Munich disaster. So I know that's a weird thing to accept, but do you know what I mean? Like, everyone knows this
winning
stuff.
The European title after.
If you ask me what happened to Man City before the year of like 2008, I wouldn't be able to tell you. I wouldn't be able to tell you when. I don't know. I have no idea.
The problem that Man United have got is that we're not just getting beat on the pitch, we're getting beat off the pitch. Yeah. What I mean is the club, the structure, the academy, everything is run better at Manchester City than it is at Man United. And hopefully, obviously, with the new takeover with Ineos, that does change. But Man City are streets ahead in every department at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, on the subject of Manchester United, Marcus Rashford came out with a statement this week, pretty much defending himself. You know, a lot of people attack Rashford, whether that's fair or unfair. He always seems, for some reason, to be the scapegoat of Manchester United. I have no idea why, but he has come out this week in a statement and said, listen, I'm not a perfect person. When I make a mistake, I'll be the first one to put my hands up and say that I need to do better. But if you ever question my commitment to Man United, that's when I have to speak up. It's like somebody questioned my entire identity and everything I stand for as a man. I grew up here. I have played for this club since I was a boy. My family turned down life-changing money when I was a kid so I could wear this badge. If you back me, good. If you doubt me, even better. I was a slight Marcus Rashford doubter, a little bit, but I read the whole statement and there is much more to that statement. I love that statement. I love a footballer. Defending himself in such an articulate way, really bringing it back to his childhood and what it means to wear that badge. I would love nothing more, and I know everyone in the world would love nothing more than one of their players talking about playing for their club as much as Rashford done there. And for me, every doubt I ever had about Rashford playing for Man United, whether he's been lazy, not tracking back, whatever, has gone. It's diminished. And all I can think of now is, why are people choosing Rashford to attack? It's weird.
I have been the opposite for a long time, in that I have supported Rashford and thought...
No, you have. To be fair to you, you have.
I've always thought these... Yeah. I know for a fact he is one of the best players in the world, technically.
Yeah.
He's got everything that you need to be an elite player.
Everything's there.
But his attitude for the last year has been way off. And if he puts a statement out like that and expects us not to go, well, hold on a minute. Yes, you care about the club. Why can't you, for 90 minutes, show that you... Actions speak louder than words. And I'm not one that hates Rashford. I absolutely love Rashford. But he could fix this. He didn't have to come out and do a statement. He could fix this in 90 minutes by tracking back. United fans would absolutely love him for it. If he ran back with the same enthusiasm as he did when he was a 19, 20, 21-year-old, then every United fan would turn and go, yeah, fair play. I don't care if he goes on a night out. I don't care. That is that you're a person, you're a human being, you're allowed to enjoy yourself. Just because you're a Man United player doesn't mean that you can't have fun. But when you come onto that pitch, yes, he says all this about the theatre of dreams and how it is magical. Then show that on the pitch. I don't need you to score three a game. If he didn't score for the rest of the season, but he tracked in the same way that Anthony does or Garnacho does or Hoyland runs about or Bruno Fernandes, there wouldn't be zero issue. The problem is not about goal scoring. He's having a bad patch of form, fair enough. It's the fact that he doesn't show that he cares. He's got to show that he cares. He can't say that he cares.
Do you not think, though, maybe with the tracking back, that's just, it doesn't play to his game and strengths, that if he is tracking back all the time, you know, you rely on Rashford for that raw pace,
yeah,
that the expression on the pitch that he does, you know, getting around
if
the man.
If he runs dribbling, too much, does he then lose, that, he then explosiveness? Lose that explosiveness? Fair enough. But you will see plenty of clips of the one with Ross Barkley against Luton, just running round him. But I say running, he's jogging round him and he's not asked. Like, yes, he might say that he's bothered, but show it for those 5 seconds, because I know I would.
Yeah, well, I literally do that to play for Sheffield United.
Like. That's what I don't understand with Rashford, is he's got everything that he needs to, and the one thing he's missing, he's got like a mental block to it, is just putting in that extra 5% and running back. It's the reason why Hoyland got given so much time at the start and why he's now performing, is he wasn't performing in front of goal, he wasn't scoring, but every United fan absolutely loved Hoyland. Why? Because he ran and he tracked back and he chased and he pressed and he showed that he cared.
So you're saying, as a Man United fan, Rashford's statement means fuck all to you?
It means everything to you as a United fan, and I absolutely love Rashford, so I didn't need to see that statement to know that he cares, but show that you care. He'd fix everything in 90 minutes by just tracking back, running back, put a tackle in. He talks about it in the statement. He talks earlier on in the statement about how he had to calm himself down because he thought he was going to get sent off in the Liverpool games.
Yeah.
Because he was so passionate and so like hit up. Take a little bit, a pinch of that, and put it into every game.
Rashford is all fart, no poo.
I absolutely love Rashford. Absolutely love Rashford. But
God, this is a Man United podcast this week. Like, look at this. But
I do find myself talking about Man United a lot, and I am like, but it's because I'm so passionate about it, and I've just watched something, and I feel like I need to vent. And the podcast
I get that. But to be fair, I've written this week's episode, so you can't. Yeah. It's not even your fault.
It's not my fault.
You're not going to like this one. Liverpool have officially topple Manchester United to have the most trophies out of any English club. Liverpool on 68 trophies, Manchester United with 67, third place, Arsenal with 49, Chelsea 34, Man City 34. But I think something like 28 of Man City's titles have come within the last 15 years or something, yeah, which is insane. What are your thoughts on that?
It was the case last season as well. Liverpool were one ahead of us, I believe. We would have been both on... They would have been on 67. We would have been on 66. We won the Carabao Cup. They're 67 all, and they've won it this season. It's always going to be that battle, and two of the biggest clubs in the world. And yeah, I absolutely love the rivalry, and that's why, you know, you see a lot of fans trying to force a rivalry. Man United's rivalry is always going to be Liverpool.
Hmm.
Man City's there. Arsenal's there because of history, but you see like Newcastle fans trying to force a rivalry and stuff like that. It's so... I heard Villa fans, by the way, on the weekend. I'm pretty sure they were singing Who the Fuck Are Man United.
That's so weird.
It's because we're in a race against obviously top four and we've beaten them, but like, but what are you on about? And they were singing that when they were 2-0 up, and then obviously Luton ended up pulling back an equaliser. And obviously I was there going, yeah, shut up, because Villa fans are a nightmare. But then they went and scored. But forcing a rivalry, the rivalry is always going to be Man United and Liverpool.
I'm going to say something quite controversial here. I do not classify, other than the fact they're in the same city, Man United, Man City, as remotely any one of the biggest derbies in the world.
It's not.
I genuinely think it's, for me, yeah, Man United, Liverpool, derby.
It
Man
will
United,
be.
Man City, it's a, that to me is a forced derby. Like, you look at Man United, Man City, the game the other day, obviously it is quite literally a derby, but there was a line of one stewards between the Man United and Man City fans. That is not a here derby for me. The atmosphere isn't there at all for me in either game. You don't feel that palpable.
I thought the atmosphere
excitement.
Was amazing.
Really?
Yeah, I thought the atmosphere on the weekend was amazing. And I've been to a Manchester derby at Old Trafford, and that was incredible.
Really? I don't know. It's something about it. It doesn't excite me at all. That game, I see that fixture, I don't get excited for it. When Man United play Liverpool, I'm excited. Even to an extent, less so now, Man United versus Arsenal. But obviously, the younger generation now won't get that.
Yeah.
For me, that Man City, Man United derby just doesn't do it for me. Doesn't tick the boxes.
I think that would all change in a season if United pushed for a title and went on a title charge and City were involved in it.
Yeah, totally. If you were first,
it happened.
And they
do you
were
remember
second,
when Vinny Kompany scored that, the win? It was 1-0. And United and City were pushing neck and neck. I don't know if it was the Aguero season. Maybe it was the season.
Was that the screamer?
No, it was he scored. I think he scored a header at the front post. But that game was like billed as the biggest game in the world at the time. I remember that clearly. And obviously now it's very different because we're just expecting United to roll over for them, which they do. So that's probably why.
So there you go. Man United fan doesn't care that Liverpool are ahead of them in trophies, apparently. I think he does a bit. Slightly. Okay, another controversial opinion I have, and I would love to hear your take on this, Alex. Is Pep Guardiola ruining football? And
yes.
I say that, straight in with a yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I say that because, yes, great manager, great track record. His teams are very hard to beat, but my fucking God, are his teams boring to watch? Like, primarily Man City. I do not watch a Man City game. I can't be bothered. The way he over tacticizes his teams, he takes the skin. Is tacticizing a word?
I don't think it is.
It's now a word. Tacticizing is now a word.
Over tacticizing.
Yeah. But the way he takes the sting out of the games, the excitement, the way he transfers in exciting players like Jack Grealish, who used to be so fun to watch and just makes them a passing back merchant or cutting inside and passing back.
Yeah, shocking.
To the root core of football now, people are just choosing to play a Guardiola because it gets results, and I get that. But I just feel like, you know, those years of the Premier League and, you know, the 90s, early 2000s, where you had your Henrys, Perez, Lundbergs, like, I don't know why I just named all the Arsenal players, but I guess because of the Invincibles, but even like Giggsy, like Tevez, Rooney, like all these players were just so exciting to watch and explosive and just had this, like, I don't know, just unpredictability about them. Whereas now, you look at Man City and you almost know what Silva's going to do. You know what Rodri's going to do. You know what Grealish's going to do. Yeah. You know Haaland's going to score a scraggly little header. You know, it's boring.
Yeah,
you're boring me.
I completely agree. And do you know what? I made this point about Rodri and in the last episode. And Rodri is emblematic of what is happening to English football and actually world football at the moment. You've got a player who's so good at everything, he's made it boring.
Yeah.
And when you've got with Guardiola, he's so great tactically. He knows exactly how to set up a team, how to wear a team down. He can just pass, wear a team down, and then he's got the players who are intricate enough to find a pass and create a chance, and then he's got a striker who's world class who can finish. The method of that is killing me watching it, and I cannot stand when another team tries to adopt that method. So whereas I cannot stand Jurgen Klopp as a person, what he's done for football in creating a completely opposite style of play to compete with that Man City team, and not just compete, beat them, that is saving football. Jurgen Klopp is saving football.
Yeah, Liverpool, amazing to watch. I couldn't agree more. Klopp fast is quite pace, literally
dynamic. He's got everything about them are the complete opposite to Man City, and they beat them at times. And that, I think, yeah, I just think that is the only thing that's stopping every manager adopting that method.
Yeah, I really hope that one day that Guardiola's tactics just gets found out. They don't work anymore. And then we can just have fucking teams like Liverpool week in, week out. And I hate to admit it, not a big fan of Liverpool, but what a team to watch. And I totally agree. Jurgen Klopp is the last saviour of football at the moment. Paul Pogba has received a 4-year ban for doping. What a waste of a career for me. And hilariously, guess who's come out of the woodwork to make a comment?
Graham Souness.
Do you know, I don't think he liked Paul Pogba. Do you know that?
No, I don't think he was his biggest fan, was he?
Never really give any clear indication. But Graham Souness on Paul Pogba said he had the potential to be one of the best midfielders ever. Instead, he wasted his career. I criticised him to such a substantial degree, and I take no satisfaction in saying I was right because I saw that huge potential. I saw the kind of player he could become. He is quite literally just reveling in his...
Sticking the knife in, isn't he?
He's sticking the knife in. Like, Paul Pogba, I don't think, has wasted his career. Like, I mean...
Won a World Cup.
He still had a great career. Like, you look at the stuff he's won. The four-year doping thing, that's his career over. Is that Paul Pogba's career over? How old is he now? 30? Yeah,
31, I think. 31? So that would be 35.
His only chance of coming back is MLS. You know, MLS, Saudi Arabia.
I think he'll turn it in.
I think he'd be fat.
Yeah, the Pogba thing, though, is a classic. He didn't try hard enough or anything like that. I don't think that was the case. I just don't think he made the right decisions in his career. I think going to Juve was technically the right thing to do. But the player that he was at Juventus would have been the same player at Man United if he'd have stayed. So it wasn't like Juventus rejuvenated his youth career. Yeah. He was always going to be that level of player. And then Man United buying him back, I think... Man United bought him back in a stage where we were in a transition, we were struggling, and we were throwing money at everyone.
You needed a marquee signing, and Paul Pogba was like, holy shit, what a signing.
Amazing signing, but for him personally, Man United was not the right club. If he'd have gone to Real Madrid or something like that, I think that would have been a better move for him.
I think he would have been better off just staying at Juventus.
He probably would have,
Like, he is obviously... He was hungry for the limelight and the stardom, and he was doing everything he needed to do at Juventus, who are a gigantic club. Internationally, if he stayed at Juventus, I genuinely think he could have become a Juve legend there. And he'd done that Man United move. The price tag was too much for him. I think it turned out that he was like 1 million per goal contribution or something in the end. But I don't think he wasted his career. Paul Pogba, for me, has been one of the most exciting midfielders in my life to ever watch. On his day, he was absolutely unplayable. It's just a shame that after that Juve move, he just couldn't find that consistency. But wow, for France, the World Cup, that game, that's not a waste of career for me. And Graham Souness, for me, can just go back in his fucking hole, mate.
Graham Souness, I think he's got every right because he's a fantastic player, obviously, to criticise. And he was right about a lot of things in terms of attitude. But at the same time, to say that he takes no pleasure, that's disingenuous.
He 100% takes pleasure.
Of course he takes pleasure.
He's taking immense pleasure.
You know, when
you're
right about something and then it comes true, you're like, see, told you. You're human. You're going to feel like that.
Yeah.
Graham Souness.
Next up is AI Done This.
AI Done This.
Okay, AI Done This. This is the part of the show where I use the very wonderful but extremely scary AI technology to create weird and wonderful things to do with football. Whereas AI is one day going to enslave you and make you work for it, I'm using it this week to design football teams as food.
Okay.
Remember the start of the episode where you literally said, have you ever wanted to eat a football team?
Yeah, I'm saying that.
Now you get to see what it would look like.
Yeah.
And first up is Manchester United. This is Manchester United as food.
Oh, so plain.
Plain?
Look at those chips. They're so chunky.
I honestly thought that's exactly the kind of thing you'd eat. When I think what Alex eats, it's
apart from apart from a sausage.
I don't know what this is. This
That's an omelette.
This is a Manchester United egg.
Manchester United omelette. Paul
Man
omelet.
Man United egg. Paul omelette. Is that a real player?
No.
Yeah. So this is Liverpool as food.
Oh,
disgusted.
Yeah. 100%.
No one will want to eat Liverpool. This is Liverpool. Who would want to eat that? If I thought of Liverpool as food, it would be a bowl of disgusting vegetables.
Oh, look at that broccoli.
It's horrendous. Ugh. The carrots look really, really in distress.
I don't mind the carrots. I like small carrots.
You like small carrots?
I like baby carrots is what I meant.
The way... The enthusiasm, you just said, I like small carrots.
I like small carrots. That's I don't it. Like those big, chunky carrots.
That is the name of the episode.
I like small carrots.
I like small carrots. Okay, next up. Oh, my God. This is one... Right, Bayern Munich as food. AI has absolutely smashed this out of the park.
There's going to be sausages. It's all sausages.
Faith German bases.
Who are these people?
Bayern Munich fans? I think that's Ribery.
Why are they so happy to be sausages?
I would love nothing more in my life to be that happy of a sausage. AC Milan, what are you thinking?
Spaghetti or pasta?
Spaghetti.
Ooh.
AC Milan looks really tasty.
I'd eat AC Milan.
I'd eat AC Milan. Would you eat AC Milan, guys? Let us know in the comments.
This is such a dumb podcast. This is crazy.
AI done this is crazy, and I'm really glad you reacted in the way you did. And it was just, yeah.
Do you remember that one reaction that I did?
You were reacting really well.
I was like, and then you were like, and then we kind of went, was like,
we are bringing the top five list back. And this week is going to be the top five biggest Premier League flops of all time. And I'm sure Alex will have some stuff to say about this. We're going to go straight in at number five. Number five is Andrzej...
Is it? I wouldn't have put him there.
Number five is...
I wouldn't put him there either.
Stop. Number five is Shevchenko. Shevchenko signed for Chelsea for 36 million. He wasn't the player Chelsea thought he was going to be. You know, the Ukrainian international had been immense.
Is that a new word as well?
Shevchenko was immense for AC Milan, but his 3 years at Chelsea following the Blues' investment returned little way in terms of value for money. And number four is Paul Pogba. If there is one deal that sums up the mess that is post Alex Ferguson era of Man United, it is the transfer Paul Pogba. We've discussed it. It was too much, too soon for Pogba. He should have stayed at Juventus. United paid a whopping 89 million, a world record transfer fee at the time, to bring Pogba back to Old Trafford in 2016. And he ended up being insanely inconsistent for Man United. And I think it was 1 million, I said earlier, £1 million per goal contribution. Number three is Andy Carroll. Yes, you must have known Andy Carroll was going to be in this list. At the time, he signed for Liverpool for 35 million from Newcastle. At the time, that was huge. After lighting up St. James's Park in the Championship and the Premier League for Newcastle, Andy Carroll bagged himself an amazing move to Liverpool. But the tall Geordie with his unmistakable ponytail only ever netted on 11 instances for Liverpool, a measly return on his transfer record fee. Number two is Jadon Sancho, 72 million for the world's moaniest player. Maybe recency bias here, in part of Sancho being this high up on our list, but this truly has been one of the worst deals in recent memory. A marquee signing for the club. The club had pursued him for years. Expectations were insanely high for Sancho, who had 50 goals and 64 assists in 137 games for Dortmund, but never lived up to that expectation of Man United. So he is in at number two. Number one, it has to be, it's got to be Romelu Lukaku's signing. 96 million signing for Chelsea at the time. They were expecting the finished product at Stamford Bridge. The man who just fired Inter Milan to the Serie A title with 24 goals. While the early signs were there when he first signed for them, the controversial TV interview where he basically said that he didn't enjoy life in West London, which is not really something you do when you sign for a club. And after just scoring 8 league goals in the 2021-22 season, he returned to Inter Milan on loan after just one season. And I'm going to actually say the floppiest team of all time as well as part of this list is Manchester United. Man United have the most amount of Premier League flops, my research has found. You're talking Pogba, you're talking Sancho, you're talking Varane, you're talking Di Maria, Sanchez, Bebe. Man United love a flop. What are you thinking?
I think Chelsea have an equal measure.
Yeah, Chelsea are equally floppy.
Your list is probably pre 2022, it probably is correct. But I think you could now put in Caicedo, Mudrick, Lavia. And I'm not saying Lavia's not going to come.
The only reason why I didn't put them is because they're still at those clubs. And right. They've still got time to prove their transfer value.
Alexis Sanchez should have been on there. I think he's the worst. Alexis Sanchez, I think he's the worst signing of all time.
He was probably six. Do you know what? I really struggled. For me, the reason that Pogba, for instance, I don't need to explain Sancho. The reason Pogba was ahead of Sanchez, because personally for me, I expected way more out of Pogba than I did Sanchez. Even though Sanchez was insane for Arsenal,
I expected so much out of Sanchez.
But I didn't think Sanchez could transform Man United. I thought Pogba could transform Man United.
I thought he could. That's the
really?
Thing. Yeah, because we were taking the argument, the debate at the time was who's better, Sanchez or Eden Hazard? He was at that level.
No, he was, yeah.
And Man United was struggling to compete for titles and things like that. And he is a title-winning player. Typically, Man United would sign a Wayne Rooney, a Berbatov, a Tevez, a Van Persie. And I thought he was going to be that. And then he wasn't just bad. He was awful. Like, forgot how to play football. Scored last night, by the way.
Is he playing for
Inter Milan, 35 years old.
Is he still at Inter?
Mm-hmm. I think because he didn't cost anything, in theory, there was no transfer fee. People probably ignore that transfer. But the amount we had to pay to get him and the disappointment in getting him and what he delivered, I think, is right up there.
The common theme I have found looking at this list is very, very sporadic that a huge transfer fee equates to an amazing sign-in.
True.
You look at teams like Leicester and so many teams in the Premier League where their amazing players have just been great finds. If I was a director of football or an owner of a club, I would invest a lot more in scouting youth.
Because, well, look at what Brighton do.
Yeah, amazing.
Dan Ashworth was brought into Newcastle for that exact reason as well.
Yeah.
And he's now obviously on his way to Man United. There's going to have to be a change with FFP rules. Clubs are going to have to look at different countries in the same way that Brighton have, in the same way that Southampton have always done in terms of producing academy products or players from different countries that then you can sell on or become world-class within your club. I think a lot of the transfer markets will change in probably the next couple of years if FFP doesn't change.
I honestly think transfer fees should be capped. I genuinely think transfer fees have only become this large because there's something behind the scenes that we're not aware of, and it's all to appease shareholders. Huge clubs
money.
Just want the highest amount of transfer fee coming in to appease shareholders for turnover. I genuinely think it's that. It
money.
Must be something to do that, because you look at Chelsea, the amount of money they spent, and they're getting no return. Then again, no return.
Chelsea are a disaster.
They're an absolute... They are a mess. They're a mess. The way
I can't believe it. Look at their transfers. And I talk about Caicedo there, 115 million. Enzo Fernandez, 120 million. Mudryk, 90 million. Lavia, 110 million or something like that. I cannot... Nicholas Jackson, 70 million or something like that.
They are... Chelsea are a disaster. I'm not. You're going to laugh, and it's because it's the only example I could think of right now when you said Caicedo. They would be better off keeping Ampadu for nothing. I would put Ampadu there ahead of him.
He's a fucking centre-half now.
No, I know, but I'm just using an example of... I'm just trying to think of a Chelsea player that didn't cost them for anything that would just do the same job.
Conor Gallagher. Box-to-box midfielder. I like the sign of Enzo Fernandez in that he's a good player, but... The amount of money they've spent on these players.
There are just so many players in the Premier League that they could have got for less in those positions that would do either the same or a better job.
What's hilarious is their best transfers are free or within the club already. So Conor Gallagher was a great transfer back because he loaned out and had a great season at Crystal Palace, and now he's performing for Chelsea. Yeah. And Thiago Silva, who I'm pretty sure was on a free. Malo Gusto's a good signing. I really liked him at Lyon, and I remember watching him and thinking he is top draw, and they've nabbed him. But really, who's a great signing for Chelsea?
Chelsea need to sort your shit out. You're dodgy. Is they a dodgy club? I don't like them. Not like you. And so there we go. I've got to be honest, mate. That's all I done. That's all I wrote.
That's everything
I wrote.
It wasn't childish.
I thought I was quite... I don't know, I'm quite disappointed in myself.
Why?
I don't know, it's not childish enough.
That wasn't childish enough.
I don't feel like it was fun for me.
Was it not fun for you?
It was in like, I don't know, I think people will prefer this, but I make this podcast just to like entertain myself.
And you really were entertained.
It was alright.
Okay.
Sorry, mate.
Oh, we've got AI done this. Oh no, we've already done that.
You told them.
Yeah.
You've told them now. Okay, so.
That's it.
That's another episode done.
Brilliant. Is that how we end?